Off the ball, GAA.
Unbelievable, it's just so good to finally get over the line and to be the right side of the result for once. Where it's just, I can't even really put it into words at the moment, but it's surreal, yeah.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Right, well, a funny golf weekly this week. We've got, we're coming to you, well, one of us is coming to us from the airport in Estonia, happy to say, joined by Max Kennedy, who is like mid-hotel planner season. Max, how are you?
Yeah, good, Fionn. Thanks for having me on.
And, oh, and there he is, finally. Sitting in his car because obviously he said something that someone didn't like hearing. Gary Murphy, who's still on mute.
There. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. How are you, Gary?
Too many buttons to press with all this
stuff.
Oh,
sure, I know. Look it. I know. It's Zoom.
Hey, Gary.
Hi, Max. How are you?
Oh, good. Yourself?
So
good. Thank you.
We're coming at you on this bank holiday Monday. So first of all, Max, thank you so much. I know you're sitting there in the, or presume you're in the lounge or whatever, waiting for your flight. Let me get this right. You're flying, you've just played in Estonia. I know it wasn't an amazing week for you, but you're flying back to Ireland to then go on to Scotland. What's the story?
Yeah. So that's the life of, it's not all private jets, you know? flying from Tallinn to Dublin, I'll see my coach Shane later on for an hour, get a little bit of a catch up, and then catch a ferry from Belfast to Cairn Ryan tonight, and then arrive in Scotland at some point tonight, get some sleep and practice around tomorrow. So very busy.
Yeah, I take that ferry. Is it the Stena from Belfast to Cairn Ryan?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, my wife's family are from Carlisle, so when we go across, we take that ferry. It's actually quite a lovely ferry. But
yeah, it's very handy.
Get the lounge, will you?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, the last time actually I was on it, Paul McGinley was sitting in the lounge. He was going back and forth. Anyway, Gary, you've just given a lesson.
Yep.
Any good?
Chipping lesson, yes. Yeah, it was a lot better at the finish than it was at the start. So that's kind of my job. So it's all his.
He's yips free.
It's all his fault from here on in. So
absolutely. Come here, Max. When you said you're going to go see Shane, will you go to Blackbush or will you meet like go separately or go elsewhere?
Yeah. So I'll go to Blackbush tonight. We usually catch up every couple of weeks. So nice to just get in, see, and make sure the swing's in the right place, and then kind of gives me confidence going into this week.
Okay. So now, as I said, you didn't have a brilliant week in Estonia. So what was going on? What happened at the Estonian Golf and Country Club?
Yeah, well, I came off a nice week last week. I felt like I took 2 weeks off in the middle of July, and then went into last week with a bit of confidence. I shot a couple of good scores over those 2 weeks. So that gave me some good confidence and felt good about my game last week in Czech. Shot 67, 68 in the first two rounds and was somewhat in contention to go on and have a good finish. Didn't, you know, I came 27th, but it just gave me a little bit of confidence, especially the way I hit it. You know, I could have put it a little bit better, and I thought if I get the putter going, there's certainly a good finish there. And, you know, some weeks just don't go your way. That's professional golf. And you've kind of got to look at the brighter picture, the brighter side. Mm. For me, that works anyway, because you're never too far away. I always say, like, when you're playing bad, you're never too far away. And you're playing good, you're not as good as you think, you know, that kind of way. So it's trying to find a happy medium between those two things.
Your season so far, how would you assess it, both in terms of results, but I guess more importantly, in your overall game and development?
Yeah, I would say that I came out last year and had quite a good start. Like I got my tour card straight as an amateur in Q School, and, you know, it all happened very quickly, and I had a really good start. I had a very good chance to get my full card last year at the on the Challenge Tour. I was, you know, 20th mid-season, top 20 guys got it. I didn't finish the way I wanted, but I actually took a lot of positives from that season. So this year, my goal was to just build on that and keep getting better at everything. And I had a great start to the season. Firstly, over at the Live Tour qualifier in Florida, where, you know, I competed there and I was quite close to getting something out of that, whether it be a Live Tour card or an International Series card. So that gave me a little bit of confidence playing against major champion winners and PGA Tour winners. You know, and then from there, we went to South Africa and I had a great start to the year. I came second in the NTT data. Pro-Am, beating, you know, guys like Casey Jarvis, who won two times in a row after that, and, you know, a couple other big names too. So again, that gave me confidence. But then going into summer, there was, you know, I haven't had the greatest start to the year, I would say. You know, it was below par. But you got to keep your head up high in this game. It's just going to hit you at times when you think you're playing well, you know. And, you know, I'm confident going into the future that the preparation and the work that I'm doing behind the scenes will come through.
Gary, as Max says, like, it's always there or thereabouts. Like, you're never a million miles away from anything. And yet you can miss cut after cut after cut, you know, and you can be one outside, two outside, even five outside. And how do you, in your experience, how would you manage that frustration? Because you can feel it's there, but it's maybe not just clicking into place exactly when you need it to.
There's quite a few things, but I think the big thing is honesty. You know, like, sometimes you can actually miss a cut and get a lot from it. But it's just to keep tipping away and keep building and, you know, really focus on your habits, you know, what they're like when you're doing well, what they're like when you're struggling. You know, most pros always have a tendency to over-practice when you're struggling. It's just, as I would say, it's almost like conscience practice, really. So try, like, rest is a huge thing as well, because when you're coming out of amateur golf into professional golf, you're going to play a lot more golf. You're going to travel a lot more. You're going to play a lot more tournaments when you're tired, you know, when you're mentally or golf fatigued, and it's trying to learn all those skills to kind of micromanage yourself. It's not always, you know, the big silver bullet as such, but just keep building. You know, even, you know, 27th last week is a good solid week. It's trying to, some weeks you play incredible golf and you finish 20th, and that can be your win, you know, and then the following week you can finish 7th or 8th and go, I actually played better last week. So it can be very frustrating too. And some weeks, certain courses mightn't suit you. Yeah. And it's to try to identify that and not put so much pressure on yourself. You know, I got to get a top 10 or I got to win or I got to do whatever. You know, it could be a ridiculous bomber's paradise and you might finish 15th and you've played literally out of your boots. And then you get some narrow track the following week and you don't feel you've done a whole lot and you finish third or fourth. So it's trying to learn those things and learn schedules and just keep good habits all the time. That's the hardest thing, because you win or you do well, you get too high, you get a bit lazy, you're struggling, you're working too hard. So it's trying to keep a happy medium between, you know, and every week is a learning curve. You're always picking stuff up. It's the hardest thing. It doesn't matter if you're like Max or you're playing off 10 handicap. It's trying to get all the facets of your game together at the same time. That's why the game is so frustrating.
Yeah.
And you hear it a lot, you know, especially on the hotel planner, because the courses aren't as demanding as some other events. So you really have to put well all the time. And that can kind of bring its own pressures too. Like, there's certain weeks where, you know, and you probably get I'd get a bit of this on the seniors tour, where certain events, you know, you can kind of play okay and you're in the same, everyone's in the same spot, and it's putting week, you know, and trying to learn the mental challenges that brings. And you know, he's developing and he's doing great. He's doing really, really well.
Come here, Max. To that point Gary was making, just about like managing all of the travel and even it's like the admin of your life now as a professional golfer. So even just the situation here, like, you're a young fella, I presume you're in unbelievably good shape. But like, you're at the airport, you're going to fly to Dublin. Now, that's fine. You're sitting on a flight, but then you'll go out and see Shane. Then you'll go up, you'll be up in Belfast, you'll get the ferry over to Scotland. All of that takes something out of you. So how do you manage all of that?
Yeah, 100%. And it kind of goes back to our college days in America. You know, you go to America to college and everything's done for you. Everything's sorted for you. All you got to do is show up on time. Your flights are booked. Your accommodation is booked. Your transport is booked. Your food is on the table. Everything is just there, done for you. And all you got to do is play golf. And you get used to that for 4 years, you know. And then all of a sudden, that's kind of taken away. And you got to manage all that yourself. So it's a completely different transition and way of life, I would say, professional golf compared to the amateur scene on, you know, whether it be on Ireland teams, whether it be on teams in America. It's a totally different scene. And I would say it's arguably the biggest obstacle that any amateur has to overcome turning professional. You can be, you know, as good as you want, but if you can't handle that side of the professional life, it's going to be very, very hard for you to make it. You know, and I have a great management company in Forefront Sports, but there's only so much they can do for you, you know?
Yeah.
So you've got to have that side of it nailed down, and I would say nailed down kind of coming to the end of your amateur career. I think I did a pretty good job at that. I'd be an organized individual. But, you know, for any up and coming amateur moving on to the pro scene, I would say that's one of the biggest things that you must learn.
It's funny you should say that, because we spoke to Lauren Walsh, who obviously is also coached by Shane, like a few months ago, and she said exactly that about herself, that she's very organized, and that's a huge part of her, the strength of her way of approaching professional life, that level of like really kind of disciplined, organized, knows what box everything goes into. Does it really make that much of a difference, do you think?
Yeah, 100%, because I've gone down, like, to be certain parts of the year where I wouldn't be like that. You know, just naturally, I suppose, not keeping accountable of myself, and your golf suffers from it then too. So if you're ahead and you feel ahead off the golf course, then that's just going to give you such freeness on the golf course that you won't be thinking about, you know, the next flight you got to book, or the accommodation in 2 weeks that you got to book, or how are you going to get food tonight? It's all like, you know, it's done and it's past you because you've already organized that. Yeah. So I definitely think it has a, for me anyway, it's different for a lot of people. You know, I see guys on tour and they're not like that, but they're performing well, right? But for someone like me, I think I definitely need to be organized.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the most part, most people I would say are like that in order to succeed and play your best golf.
Let's talk about the game itself. So you came second in South Africa, as you said. So now I read afterwards that you made some short game adjustments that helped you finish second. So what adjustments did you make, and how well have they held up?
Yeah, and it's probably one thing that I'm struggling with right now is the short game. At the start of the year, I did a lot of work in Florida and in South Africa before the events that we played in. And it goes back to, I had a chat last year with Bob Rotella. I had a chat with him.
Oh, wow.
Amazing individual. And we probably had a, you know, a half an hour, 40 minute chat. And his number one thing, he said, you know, all of these guys, look at, you know, Phil Mickelson, Tigers, arguably some of the worst drivers of the golf ball there is, you know, but they were able to get it around because they were so much better than everyone else from 120 yards and in. And he just kept on going about, you got to be as good as anybody from 120 yards and in. If you can do that, you'll figure out a way with the driving, with the long irons. But if you're not good from 120 yards and in, that's really where, you know, you make your bread. And so going into this year, that was one of my big goals is to, you know, through doing different tests and continuously testing myself to get better, make my short game better. But it kind of, you know, it goes up and down. And right now I would say, you know, if I was a 9 out of 10 at the start of the year, I'm probably, you know, a 7 or an 8 right now. So it definitely could be improved. But I, you know, I feel like if I can get that in the right place in terms of around the greens, my putting's quite good, but around the greens, you kind of, you take a lot of pressure away from yourself. So that's one thing that I can improve right now.
You were bogey free in the final round of Fancourt, and but like you also said, I think I'm quoting you correct, like you didn't feel like at your best. So to go bogey free in the final round, to finish second, you know, to really kind of put the pedal to the metal, as it were, that must be unbelievably encouraging that you're not at your absolute optimal prime and yet you can still perform to such a high level.
Yeah, well, it was cool because, you know, I'm young in my career. I would have watched the DP World Tour for, you know, the last 10, 12 years, seeing guys like Eddie Pepperell, who I was paired with in the final round, and to go out there and, you know, shoot a bogey-free 3-under and come in, you know, second place, nearly getting a win with playing with him is kind of cool. You know, you watch him on the TV when you're growing up, and to be able to stand there and be confident and you know, beat him on the day and put up a good score is quite cool, you know. And that kind of gives you confidence, you know, through, you know, low points. If you go and miss a cut, or you don't have a couple of good weeks in a row, you kind of look back and say, okay, you're not too far away. Mm. Something like that isn't that far away.
Is he a nice guy?
A good story from this week, actually.
Come on.
Just to go to your point about golf and how it can switch. So Rory Franson, Scottish guy, my age, 24, 25, got his tour card through the Tartan Tour last year. And he's played a full year. He's a grinder. You'd always see him working hard on the range. He's only made two cuts all year going into this week. And just at the start of the week was just flushing the ball, felt really good, you know, out of nowhere, to be honest with you, and went and won by three shots on the Hotel Planet Tour this week. And then, you know, that's how it can change. All of a sudden he's going from thinking, listen, I have no chance to save my tour card, to I could get a DP World Tour card here. Yeah. You know, so that's one of those good stories. And you hear it all the time, but it comes from guys that just don't stop, don't quit. Stick with it.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, a great story from this week.
That's the frustrating thing with practice, because, you know, you put in the time and the hours and we never know when it's going to come out, you know, so it's just to keep at it, you know, and keep kind of modest and humble about it too. And, you know, I think all the time be waiting for it. You know, it's a funny thing. It's so rare that you do a body of work and it happens the following week. You know, it might come out a month later. It's it's that great unknown with golf, but you just have to keep brushing up all the time. You know, at your age and at your level, like there's no major surgery required going forward. It's just to keep getting everything as tight as possible and you know, wait for your week. And then the hard part is when it is your week, you got to make the most of it. So, but a lot of guys, I think, especially when they make the jump, they think it's all this big deep ocean and I got to swim as hard as I possibly can. You know, if you get to a certain level, you got to trust. Like Harrington was the best at that. Like his transition from elite level amateur into the pros was seamless because he just kept tipping away, improving. Mm. And never got phased.
Through a short game.
Well, he's short.
That's his short game.
Yeah, his short game was mental. It's probably disimproved, to be honest. But and I was saying this to Barry Redden, who's my uncle through marriage, who's 80 years of age now, and he's like, my putting is gone. I said, well, he didn't miss a putt for about 70 years, so it was a bloody time. You know, and it's true. You just keep tipping at it. And like, even, you know, that's a heavy load travel-wise getting over there. So get out and probably just walk the course in the morning. Get some air into your lungs. And half the time you get a much better. Like, I did that a couple of weeks ago. I went over to the qualifier in Scotland and made that same trip. And it was like almost 9 hours door-to-door. And I'm 53. I can't get out of a car and go play. So I just walked the course that evening and then played a practice round the next day. It's just trying to conserve as much energy as well. You know, that's a heavy travel load from Stony home and up on the ferry too.
Yeah,
Asher, hey, I'm young, Gary.
Yeah, I know. Gary's a croc. You know, I mean, I say that with all respect.
Washed up pro.
A washed up pro. You stop. Is it? I mean, Is it a case of maintaining a level of aggression that's, you know, that's appropriate to the conditions, but also making sure that above all you stay patient, which I think sound like it's easy. These are easy words to put in a sentence, but like it must be next to impossible to be on the front foot, but at the same time go, you know what, as Gary says, just it's there. Just you got to wait for it because you're never a million miles away from it. But when it's ready, when it's there and it's going to play ball with you, you have to be ready to play ball with it.
Yeah, yeah. The more patient that you act on a golf course, the more it'll reward you. As soon as you start to get aggressive on the golf course, I think it just goes in the opposite direction. And I was kind of, you know, bringing up to Shane actually in the last couple of months, like you go over to college in America and you kind of learn how to shoot, you know, two or three under par and be in contention after three rounds. You know, the leaders in an average golf tournament in college golf is probably between, you know, 8 under and 12 under. So that allows you to shoot 3 under every round and be in contention. Whereas if you go out with that mindset, you know, in pro golf, you know, 20 under par is winning most tournaments. So you, all of a sudden you don't get away with shooting 2 or 3 under. You might just make the cut. You might just come 30th place. But I think it's, you don't want to then be too aggressive to try and go out and shoot 5 under, because that's how you go the opposite direction. So it's, again, it's kind of finding a balance, but ultimately not really thinking about score, just getting ingrained in the process and in every shot. I think that's what you see with Scottie Scheffler and why he's so good. He doesn't worry about the score. That just takes care of itself. Yeah. And it's getting more ingrained into that, you know, mindset, even though it's a lot easier said than done.
Sure.
But that's ultimately how you get to the top.
Max, where's the tournament this week in Scotland?
Isn't it Schloss Roxburgh?
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like a manor estate in an hour and a half north of Edinburgh.
All right, okay. Have you played there before?
Played there last year.
I googled it. Looks nice. Schloss Roxburgh, which is weird. It's got a German, and then Roxburgh, a German word.
Yeah. So looking forward to it. Should be good.
What was the course in Estonia like?
It was actually beautiful. Like they have big plans over here. So there was one course, Estonia Golf and Country Club, that we were playing.
Yeah.
And then they're actually building another golf course right beside it. It's about 20 minutes outside of Tallinn, built by Annika Sorenstrom. And this golf course that we played was really, really nice and has a lot of potential. I think they have big plans to, you know, continue this event and make it bigger and then ultimately bring it onto a DP World Tour event in several years' time.
So obviously, I mean, look, Estonia this week, I mean, it's been a busy season. Estonia just the week gone by. You've got Scotland this week. Then you're flying back because, next week, Jesus, we're already, next week it's Killincastle for the Irish leg of the Hotel Planner. So it's the second year that it's being played at Killincastle. You made the cut last year. I actually watched you play. First of all, it's my home course, so it's a course I know incredibly well. And I find it, as just a regular Saturday comp player, it's tough enough. But like watching you guys, I won't say tear it apart, because it doesn't feel like it's a course that anybody can actually tear apart. What for you is the biggest challenge at Killeen?
Killeen's the ultimate test, and it shows through the scoring. You know, from last year, we'll see this year, but from last year, I mean, we didn't even play it off the tips.
No.
And it was the lowest score of the year in Challenge Tour, maybe the second lowest that won it. And, you know, fifth place was 5 under par. It's just one of those really difficult tests where it you know, it challenges every single part of your game. And for me, no matter how well you hit it around Killeen, you're going to have short game shots. Because you're going into small greens, firm greens, with long irons, you're going to have short game shots. So if you can be tight, you know, with the short game, miss it in the right side, right places, I think you'll do well. But it's just an ultimate test. It's a great golf course, and I'm looking forward to it in a week's time.
I mean, obviously, I know that the membership are all very excited, blah, 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 blah. But they're also cursing the Hotel Planner Tour because the rough has been grown up over the last couple of months.
Yeah.
The thing is like a jungle in there. Like, I'm not kidding. I think they found David Livingstone, like, you know, the African Explorer just lost. It's unbelievable. And like, I mean, I know the fairways are generous, but I have to say it's a terrific test. Now tell me, are they going to play it off the tips this year? I mean, the condition, it's dry as a bone.
I hope so. I think it would be very, very cool. I think Level Par would win the golf tournament.
Oh wow.
But I think it would be unbelievable. I mean, we played off the maybe a mix between the blues and the whites.
You
last
did mix
year,
off, yeah.
And it was as hard as it gets. I mean, you know, even for us, we're not bad at golf, you know, and it was that hard. So I would like to see it off the blues, but you know, I'm not sure if it would suit everybody or fancy everybody. Off the blacks, sorry, yeah.
Yeah. Jesus, yeah. Have you played it off the blacks, Gary?
No, sure, it's ridiculous off the blacks. That's what
it is.
We need a week 9,000 yards.
Need a buggy anyway.
Yeah.
What's the vibe out with the Irish crew on the tour, Max?
Yeah, there's a great vibe. There's loads of us out here this year compared to last year. Last year there might have been, you know, four of us, five of us maximum. But you know, there's probably eight or nine of us this year, so it's, you know, it's nice to see different Irish faces every single week, and you know, I think all the lads seem to be playing well. I think, you know, I was the only one to miss the cut last week, maybe, so that's, you know, kind of good, and you know, the more of us out here, the better. You see so many nations who have dozens of guys out here: Denmark, Sweden, Germany, France. You know, they have all these players out here, and for us to kind of match that as a small nation is quite nice this year.
Is there any, like, do you guys hang out, like, or is there a kind of a system where the Irish guys are not taken care of, but like you can kind of lean on, or some kind of network, or
we'd catch up every once in a while for dinner, say every week or two for dinner, and you know, most of us would stay with each other. I'd stay with Liam, and then the other lads share with each other too. So we definitely keep connected, and you know, I think that's only a good thing to have friends out here that you know, that want you to succeed, and then we push each other also.
Who's the messiest?
Who's the messiest? We'll keep that one quiet.
All right. But there are, I guarantee you, there's some lad who's just, it's like, were you raised or were you just dragged up?
Stay away from him.
Yeah. Gary, were you messy on tour, were you?
Was I messy on? No, I'm not a messy person. Was I messy on tour? Depends where I was, Phil, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. Come here, Max. You're on the move now. So
I'm on the move. I've got to catch a flight.
Okay. Well, listen, Max, we'll be hopefully seeing you in a week or so at Killeen Castle. Listen, thanks so much for taking the time. Have a safe flight.
Absolutely.
And best of luck in Scotland.
Thanks, gents. Pleasure.
Cheers.
See you later.
Cheers, Max.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Yeah, that's some life, though. I mean, from my level, I'm looking at it going, God, I'm full of envy. And, you know, these guys are playing top tier golf. It's not easy. Like, I spoke to one of the organizers of the Hotel Planner last year at Killeen. And he said to me that the single biggest challenge for all these guys who can all play very, very good golf is adapting to life on tour. That is by far the biggest challenge. And it's kind of stayed with me since.
Oh, it is. It's like, sure, it's a different set of circumstances every week, and trying to be organized and like the hotel, it's well named. Like, the better you plan for these things, for a lot of them, you know, the more you know your schedule and you have things in advance. With modern day travel, you can book long in advance and save a ton of money. You could easily save, you know, 300-400 euros a week over the course of 20 weeks in the year, which is a big save, and that gets you probably another, you know, two or three events just on economizing. And it's trying to, you know, like, Max is in his second year, so the first year out, it's new and fresh and everything is shiny, and your second year at times can be a little more difficult. There's a bit more of the mundane to it. You know, that's a shocking trip for him today, home from Estonia and up to Shane and up to the ferry and across over to Edinburgh. So, you know, trying to get all your ducks in a row is, you know, because he's got a, he's got to land kind of in peak condition and get out. You know, the way the scoring is on that tour, there's no slow start. So you got to be ready to go Thursday morning and try to keep your foot down. But it'll be nice for him coming home next week.
Oh, it'd be great.
It'd be nice to see all of them in the flesh in Killeen Castle. And you know, because for us following the tour, you kind of know certain names, and it's nice to see them up close. But it's also at that time of the year as well, which is precarious because they're all kind of hedging their bets and jockeying for position. And you know, the Challenge Tour, the Hotel Planner Tour, is not a tour you stay on. It's a tour you're trying to get off as quick as possible. So you'll see Dreams end at the start of the year, or the end of the year, and Dreams begin. So it's they got to be, you know, getting in the mix, trying to get a full card, or at least get to Q school and avoid the stages of tour school and get their careers up and running, really. And then there's also the financial as well. They're playing for, you know, 10% of what they could potentially play for. So it's nervy time for a lot of them, you know. And the thing, consistency is not really rewarded on that tour, so I never worry too much. If a guy blows out and misses a cut, it's trying to get top fives and wins. I think the math on it is you need overall about 7 top tens to get a card with either a win or a second or a third, and you know, decent finishes, and they're the numbers these guys have to produce to try to get off that tour.
Yeah, it's interesting though. It's a tour you want to get out of, so it's a transition tour. So does that mean then, as I asked Max about playing aggressive, does it mean that like there is a tendency for players to go at it, like to try and make, maybe not each week count, but make sure not to leave anything on the table?
Yeah, of course. There's no, you know, you can't make money on that tour.
No.
You know, you can't earn a living. You can't go, I'm going to play 10 years on the Challenge Tour, because you're just going to be bankrupt. So you got to get off it as quick as you can.
Yeah.
The hard thing is, and he's done well at this, he's finished heavy when he's played well.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing you're looking for in certain players. You know, finishing top 15, you could finish 15th every week on that and probably not get a card. So you need to finish heavy when you're doing well, and make the most of your week when it's in front of you. And then, you know, try scrap weeks and nick top tens out of weeks when you don't have your best stuff. That's, if you look at Rory or look at Scottie Scheffler, that's the way they've lived their lives since they've been on tour. They've won probably only an average of once or twice a year. If Rory's even done that, he probably hasn't, but they have loads of top 10s and top 20s, and you're all the time, you know, feeding on that and finding something from that.
Yeah. In other golf, to be honest, I watched a bit of the Rocket Mortgage. So Michael Thorbjørnsen won his actually first PGA Tour victory, which was nice, bogey-free 63. But I was watching the Women's Open. You all right there? Do you need a glass of?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm sick at the moment. So.
So am I. I woke up with the summer cold yesterday and just, but you're still out giving lessons. Look at you, you old trooper, you. Yeah, so I was watching the Women's Open. So Shiho Kuwaki won in a playoff. It was disappointing. All the Irish girls all missed the cut. So Leona, not by much, but Lauren Walsh missed the cut. It was disappointing for them. But did you watch any of it?
I watched the end of it, and I watched the playoff, and I watched a good few bits during the week. It was a very difficult challenge. It was baked out. It's such a tight golf course, heavily bunkered. And she averaged, I think, 79% of fairways, which is mental.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. She won her playoff. Esther Henselite, she forced extra holes. Unbelievable birdie on the 72nd. But then was just unlucky in the playoff. But look, Kamir, what does that say about the strength of Japanese golf? It's like we, for a long, long time, particularly in the women's game, we looked at the Koreans and went, oh, they're all dominant, they're all this, they're all that. But it feels like there's like a, like, I wonder if, do the Japanese, like a bit like, you know, their 100-year plan for football, like, do they have a plan to develop to dominate golf, or certainly to be major players in golf?
I think the big thing is that, and it's something I would dream of in Ireland, but when you have a home tour, now we're never going to have a home tour, the country's too small, but
yeah,
if you look at the golfers that South Africa's produced, Australia would have produced, they would have had a good tour back in the day. You know, the men's and women's and even seniors tour in Japan, it's a strong tour. It's very home-based. It's very difficult for foreigners to get on it. She's won twice already this year on the Japanese tour. And it doesn't matter where you win. If you're winning, it's a habit, you know, that you can recreate in different environments. And she alluded to the fact that in the Women's Open, the US Women's Open, she finished 14th, which kind of gave her the shot in the arm. Because a lot of Japanese over the years have struggled to travel. And I get that, because it's such an amazing country and their food undoubtedly is the best food in the world. And they're coming over to Europe or going to the States, and, you know, they're just out of their comfort zone. And, you know, even the use of an interpreter, you're in a foreign country, you don't, you know, I wouldn't notice that last year. I hadn't been in China in a long, long time. The language barrier is phenomenal. Yeah. The food is so different. You're so out of your comfort level. And, you know, if you don't have the right nutrition week on week, it obviously affects performance. So I think that's why they have not been the best travelers over the years. We've never really, of all the great Japanese players, we've never really seen, outside of Matsuyama really, guys maintain that level when they go abroad. But so for her, it's a huge win.
It's amazing.
You know, it's up panache as well. Like, her up and down on the first tile was kind of what Max was alluding to, really. You know, she, if you think how she approached that hole, she said 79% of fairways for the tournament, which is just ridiculous. You wouldn't do it with the 7-iron. But and then to hit a terrible shot up against the bank, and you've got to scramble a 4. And she just did it with such grace, really. Like, a beautiful shot in there. And then obviously bottled the putt. Or hold the putt, rather. And then, you know, horrendous misfortune for Hemsleth. It's a spectator and goes into the bush. So, and I keep saying it doesn't matter how well you play, you need a slice of luck along the way to get across the line. But
I mean, I think this year has shown that the women's majors, just in terms of general play, but also in venue selection, has been a remarkably successful one, I think. I mean, they're always going to have an attention problem. Trying to get eyes on the golf is always going to be an issue. But I think they've taken amazing steps this year. I think there's some pretty smart people figuring this stuff out. But one lingering issue remains. So we've had 5 women's majors, all done now. That's it for the year. But the LPGA season goes on into November. Like literally, the drop-off is going to be unbelievable. And I mean,
yeah, and financially too, like, that they were playing for 10 million last week.
Yeah, like it just feels
the average price,
like,
was what, 2 probably.
Yeah, I don't know.
The major's gone very top heavy.
Like, the PGA Tour obviously has a problem that the FedEx Championship or the FedEx is meant to address, which is what happens when the majors end and general interest in golf tails off. But the LPGA Tour has that problem exponentially. And, like, similar what we say with the men's game, to stagger the majors more so that you keep interest peaking at different parts of the year rather than just compressing them into one kind of 2.5
I know,
period.
But I know, but I think the PGA Tour have recognized they just cannot go up with the behemoth that is
the NFL. The NFL, and, you know,
and
for sure.
But I do think, you know, I would love to see the USPGA, you know, and it's this thing. I've always, as a kid growing up, referred to the Open as the British Open. That's what it was when I was a kid. It's now the Open Championship. You know, can the PGA be the Open PGA Championship or something? And get it, you know, if you sat that, I don't know, maybe the Middle East, like the Middle East has done I know there's obviously geopolitical issues there at the moment. There's no denying that, and not naive enough to think. But, you know, if you could, obviously the weather is a factor. But if that moved around and went to October, even as a standalone, it would certainly garner a lot of interest around, you know, an Irish Open in September or the PGA Championship in Wentworth or, you know, some event in the States, maybe in October, and you could build something around moving that major. Because I just think the way it is at the moment, because the Players are such a huge event, Augusta, the Players, the PGA, the US Open, guys are taking gaps and then the Open. And I think if it moved back to late September, early, even mid-October, and then, you know, the way to Augusta is not as vast as it is now. And yeah, it's kind of similar with the women's too. They are. I'm not saying it dilutes it, but they are pretty thick and fast. Like,
oh yeah, completely.
You know, even those world events back and into majors years ago didn't really work either. You know, because certain guys don't want to play the week before, but you can't miss a world championship type of thing. So, I'd love to see the PGA move after the FedEx possibly, and maybe go around the world, maybe, I don't know, even South America. I think weather-wise in October, it wouldn't be horrific. But Australia probably wouldn't work. You know, that's more of a February, January, February type thing. But yeah, I think the scope, you know, and then you're going to kick an Olympics in every 4 years in August. So that's another thing as well. That really gets the calendar jammed up too. So I think there's food for thought there with both the men's and the women's.
No doubt. Just we'll wrap this kind of a feels on this Bank Holiday Monday that the golfing season, though still continuing, feels less.
Are you playing the Pro-Am next week?
I'm not. No, I'm actually on my holidays. I played a scratch cup in Black Bush yesterday and started really well, just cozing along, and then just four-putted the, on course B, I four-putted the seventh, and I was just like, oh, here. And I hurled the golf ball over the hedge.
Yeah. At least you didn't hurl the putter. It's cheaper to get a new golf ball.
Yeah, it was. But no, I'm away. I'm away, unfortunately, on the holidays. But I would encourage, look, I mean, we talked about this last week. So the Walker Cup, which is in Lahinch in early September, is like, I would strongly encourage anyone who has any interest in watching absolutely top tier golf that really, really counts, because there's real stake at play. The Walker Cup in Lahinch.
Yeah.
But also, I'm going to say it for next week, I thought the experience of it last year was phenomenal. And I was there for three of the days, and we're all 3 days. It was exceptional just watching these guys. And obviously with the Irish interest is something else. It's so much fun to watch really, really good players. Like Gary, I came to watch you on the Monty, and it was a lot of fun. So
I think we're lucky, because we've got next week, we've got the Walker Cup in Lahinch, which is, I mean, I can still remember nearly every step of being involved as a caddy in the Walker Cup in Portmarnock in
1991, yeah.
And we had, obviously Porrick, Paul McGinley and Garth McGimsey played. But maybe three or four or five of those caddies ended up having pro careers out of it.
Really?
Any 14, 15, 16-year-old kid with any aspirations of, you know, stars on the rise, which is fine, or any of the young amateurs, the 19, 20-year-olds, you literally have to go down to the Walker Cup in Lahinch or go up to Killeen Castle and go, these are the levels I'm aspiring to. What Absolutely. Are these people doing?
I couldn't agree more.
And, you know, the Irish Open is such a huge event on its own, but you can get in amongst, you know, now there'll be great crowds in Lahinch, but you can get in amongst the action a lot better, and you will see, how good these guys are, especially in Lahinch. You know, we're going to see some superstar American kids that are going to be on our TV screens for years to come, and some of the GB and I guys. Whilst they're going to be under pressure, I think on paper, America are very strong, but Lynx golfer golf can be a great leveler, and I think it'll be a spectacular weekend in Hinch. There's a lot to see and learn in those events going
Well,
forward. So there's still plenty to look forward to.
there's a month of top tier golf coming up in Ireland. So we mentioned, so obviously we've got Killeen Castle next week. We've got the Walker Cup. Is it the 2nd of September? I think, whatever it is, the beginning of September. And then the week after that, you've got the Irish Open, which is at Trumpdoon Beg. Now, it was confirmed more or less, I think, yesterday that the man himself is going to make an appearance. He is coming to Ireland, which is proving to not be to most people's liking. In terms of
Yeah, but
his.
it's gonna he's only gonna be there pre-tournament. He's gonna probably play the pro-am, and it'll be, a zoo security wise. But if you're going
You don't
down to
think he'll be
watch the
there for the
golf,
event itself?
no. I'd like to think he's a little bit too busy to be spending 4 days watching the Irish Open, but
Well, one of the things I have seen is that like two very conflicting arguments. One is the argument that like, look, the Irish Open, it is part of the DP World Tour, and that the Irish Open is a great event in the European golfing calendar, and as such should be enjoyed on that level. Then there's the counter argument, which is like, look, the very fact that it's being played at a course owned by a man that I'd probably be safe to say most people in Ireland would have, at best, strong feelings of ambivalence, never mind outright dislike.
I know that, but the reality of the situation is you've an American pharmaceutical who's the sponsor. It's a commercial decision. Donald Trump, whether you like him or loathe him, that's an irrelevance. He owns the resort, which is a huge employer for the area. It's absolutely vital to West Clare that Doon Beg, thrives going forward because, and I would see it myself in Baltrae, like the influx of Americans is huge for the local community from lots of subsidiary employment, never mind just the resort itself. So and that was pretty much down and out when he took it over. And it's like everything, we'll never be at a level where we can control the politic of anything, apart from when you can vote, and I would urge people to vote. But it's a foreign diplomat coming in, and I think you have to respect the office as much as anything, whether you like him or you don't like him. But
No, I
I think
mean,
the event as a standalone will be sensational. We've got all our big guys back. Doon Beg's an awesome resort.
like
And
him or
I think
loathe him, his people or whoever is that he did put in charge of fixing up the course, they've done a great job. It's a really good course.
I know, but how many politicians do we like anyway? You know what I mean? They're all the same. They're like nappies. They're full of shit and need to be changed often. So,
I
but I
mean,
think as an event, like we had an amazing time here in the K Club last year. It'll be another fantastic, and it's great for the local area. You've got the Walker Cup and the Irish Open back to back
I
weeks.
know.
So,
In the same county. Unbelievable. Oh no, yeah. Do you
Lahinch is
think
the
there'll be
kind of.
protests? Do you think it'll be disrupted by protests?
Well, I saw what happened in Mullingar Golf Club a couple of weeks ago, and Mullingar is dear to my heart. They've been an unbelievable supporter of amateur golf for 60, 70 years. They've a fabulous scratch cup there, and some are absolute arseholes went out and dug up the greens. So if you want to protest, protest peaceably, sit at the gate, do whatever you want to do. But this is a huge commercial thing for the County of Clare. And disrupting stuff like that, it doesn't do anything. If you want to, if you're not don't like your politician, vote, and you can change it. But going out and damaging golf courses is of no benefit to anyone.
No, sorry. Obviously, I'm not suggesting that even the protesters at their angriest would do anything to damage Trumpdoon Beg. But I think that, like, do you think that it'll disrupt the execution of what is an absolutely brilliant event?
Well, I hope it won't be because, as we saw last year, we had so many children watching the golf. So many kids are
Yeah, it was
now getting into
unbelievable.
golf because of the Masters 2 years ago and obviously this year. And, you have your heroes. Seve was my hero when I was a kid. I wanted to be Seve. We have you know, hundreds and thousands probably of young kids want to be Rory or want to be Shane. And that's your time to go see him and just go off and, you know, it's a great day out. You know, you're getting 8-9 hours of entertainment. You go to a football match, it's over in 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
And they've been falling over, feigning an injury half the time. So
All right. Jeez. That was a drive-by on footballers.
Yeah. But, you know, we're lucky. We've got some great golf coming up in the next couple of months. And hopefully everything goes according to plan.
Right. Well, on that note, Gary, as always, look, thanks very much. I appreciate you're not feeling the best. So I really appreciate you taking the time to between lessons and whatever to talk to us. And look, a big thank you to Max Kennedy, who's probably boarding as we speak. And obviously, very best of luck to him in Scotland this week and obviously in Killeen Castle next week. We'll talk to you again next week. Nathan will be with the Rhineline and Shane this Thursday. So get your questions into him and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Phil.